To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lai.
It's honking time!
It's honking time!
This is the Gaggle of Geeks on 2SER, the podcast where we honk a lot about things we love, mainly pop culture.
Yes, it's your weekly geekly, and it is me, Blake Howard.
And me, Sophie Lai.
There we go. This show, I've felt more like a beer than any other show we've done together.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just feel like, I just look down at the desk in 2SER Studios like going, this could be significantly improved with a beer today. So I was drinking a tea out of a keep cup, like a really good citizen.
Please, I'm really annoyed. So I went down to like meet a friend thinking, oh, I'll just get a tea, you'll be fine. It cost me $4 for a Twinings tea bag. $4.
What? Bullshit.
So I'm like trying to like, you know, make as much. This is like probably my third cup from the same tea bag because $4 freaking.
Twinings.
When I could have gotten a box for that.
I would have gone, bullshit.
I thought it was like $4. Oh, is it one of your fancy T2 ones? Fine. No, it wasn't. But we're not here.
We call bullshit on that tea bag.
I know. But we're not here to sip the tea. We're here to chat pop culture and for your weekly geekly.
That is correct. And first up, the First Lady of Gaming, we're going to visit her latest cinematic outing with Tomb Raider. Have you seen Alicia Vikander, like working out for this movie?
No, but in that first opening scene where she's, well, not in the opening scene, but in one of the first scenes where she's like in a boxing ring, just seeing how ripped she is.
Yeah.
In that time.
Yeah, they like.
Oh my gosh.
This is the last you need to even mention. She's just like shredded. Like she's, there was a couple of interviews on Entertainment Tonight, which have come out, like in a few screen grabs and stuff were up on the Twitters and whatnot. Mm. And there was some like really amazing stuff where she's like just doing these awesome chin-ups and pull-ups on Olympic rings. And she's just looking great. But that's really all you need to know. Look, Tomb Raider.
She's shredded. I don't want to be in a room with her if she's angry at me. She'll beat the living shit out of you.
Look, so here's a weird thing.
Yep.
I have watched heaps of movies and thought, man, wouldn't it be amazing if this movie had a game?
Yep.
And like, I'm a Michael Mann obsessive. We've talked about it a couple of times, but like imagine, you know, I find myself with his movies or like movies of that ilk going, oh, wouldn't it be so cool to play like Red Dead Redemption as a character from Last of the Mohicans, you know, with a musket and a hatchet? Or wouldn't it be awesome if Heat was like a heist game like Grand Theft Auto? Like, wouldn't it be amazing with those characters to you know, rob stuff? The problem that video game adaptions always have is like I coined a term in a review a couple of years ago, and I just keep using it. It's like, I call it auto-redundancy, meaning that you play a rad game, and this film is based off of the 2013 game of the same name, which is kind of like the reboot of the Tomb Raider franchise.
And that one was an origin story of sorts.
Yeah,
as well.
It was an origin story that they hadn't pursued in the games before. And I just feel like I really wonder for hardcore gamers and huge fans of the franchise, and I'm only like I'm only a passenger. I'm just a person who's, you know, gone through whether watching the movie is actually like a lesser experience than playing the game. Because although this is a movie that they're taking really seriously, they've got good, you know, great cast, solid director, the screenwriters are clearly doing their work to adapt it as best they can. Tomb Raider is kind of like, it's a very okay film, but I don't know if it is a good film. So I'm slightly conflicted on it. The story, just to give the gist of the synopsis, is that, you know, Lara Croft, who's played by Alicia Vikander, Oscar winner Alicia Vikander, she's been orphaned by her dad, Lord Richard Croft, who's played by Dominic West, McNulty from The Wire, if you're a fan. And she's orphaned by him because he doesn't return home from an expedition. She goes through this tough patch of her life as she sort of denies her inheritance, denies everything that's connected to sort of a well-off life in order to just sort of be in denial, like he has left her. And right at the moment where she sort of surrenders to the fact that he's probably dead, she gets a clue to this expedition, this final thing that he had to go and do. And she discovers that his life's work has been uncovering sort of these mythical stories connected to death. And so in the pursuit of finding her father's last mission and seeing what happened to him, she kind of gets entangled in his last mission. And some other sort of spooky things happen along with spooky organization known as the Trinity Organization, and Walton Goggins is kind of at that last destination in the secret devil's waters near the in one of the islands off Japan. So she gets entangled in that. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are really good about this movie, and I don't want to poo-poo it because it's really difficult when you're talking about a movie that's just solid. And it is absolutely solid. I think Vikander does a good job, and I think there are some really cool stunts. I think that sometimes the CGI money is like, how do we show that we don't have great special effects in this? We make it dark as hell so people can't take notice. But overall, I think there's some really powerful moments. I think there's some great emotional moments. It wasn't a very fun movie, Soph. I didn't really smile except for an amazing moment where Nick Frost comes in as a cheeky proprietor of a pawn shop and sort of flirts with Alicia Vikander. It's like one of the only beautiful moments of relief and levity in the movie. And so, yeah, Tomb Raider, you know, in summation, is a very solid film. If you like the 2013 reboot of the game, I'm guessing that you're going to really dig this. I don't know enough about the whole franchise. I'm not as big a fan as others to tell you what's out there. But I know that the game is like really bone rattling and bone jarring, and Vikander definitely does, you know, gets a go at that. And I think it's really fun. But also the massive problem that this has as a movie adaption, that makes it sort of dampens the fun is, every single video game adventure, archaeological, Tomb Raider character is an Indiana Jones ripoff. And when you take it from the game and you put it on the screen, the ripoffness stands out. And so there are also massive chunks of this movie I have a massive problem with because they're essentially lifted from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And they're nowhere near as fun as Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So look, it's solid. I'll forgive them their homage, I don't know. What did you think, Soph?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a solid film, as you mentioned, a very solid action film.
Yeah.
Barely any levity, and, like, you know, the slight bit of levity, like, aside from Nick Frost, there was, like, her time on the boat with Lu Ren, who's played by the amazing Daniel Wu. It was like, oh, look at this. This is fun.
Then, yes.
And then suddenly it was just like grim, 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 grim. But overall, like, I enjoyed it thoroughly. Much better than probably the Angelina Jolie one.
They were very camp fun. The first one was camp and fun.
Yeah.
The second one was pretty garbage. But the first one was pretty
camp fun. But also they were all very catered to the male gaze. They're like, let's just, you know, highlight her ass and her tits for a bit longer. This was just like, you know, full just strength coming from Alicia Vikander, which I really enjoyed. I had a few issues. I'm like, girl, you cannot run that fast without food, like 2 days without food. And then when she just like goes, I'm going to go on a rescue mission. I'm like, you don't have any supplies. This is, what are you doing?
She has a backpack. Yeah, no, I agree.
She threw the backpack down and just started running in the forest.
And look, she does take a battering, you know, and the 2013 game, as I said before, has been described to me as like a grisly experience. Like people who've played that game have described to me that if you like take a stack in that game where you fall off a waterfall, the game makes you fall down the waterfall and then watch a twitching body, blood spurting and dying. Like, it really shows you the consequence. Obviously, it doesn't get to that level in this movie because she gets battered, but it's the same thing. Like, I think at one hand, they do a really fantastic job of kind of doing the John McClane with her. They show that she gets beaten up.
Yep.
They show that she takes hits. They show that she gets all bloodied and punctured and needs DIY surgery. But then at other parts in the movie, she's like running through a collapsing cave and the worst thing that happens is she gets dust in her hair. And it's just like, There's a weird balance they're trying to strike.
It's exactly the beginning. Like, you know, they show her getting beaten up in her, like, hometown of London. So you're like, oh, she's not infallible, right?
Yeah.
She can get beaten up. And then there's that bloody scene at the end. I'm like, when did she become Superwoman between then and now?
Yeah, it's a hard look. And the reason I would say, this is what I say, it's a hard balance to strike. And some actors get away with that kind of BS, like The Rock and some movies, or Vin Diesel, like where like in the Fast and Furious movies, they just make up physics, like things don't exist. You barely even get a bruise.
Oh, yeah, like running a car off a submarine. Yes. That's still the greatest.
Still good. But look, I don't want to poo-poo Lara Croft, because I actually think that Tomb Raider, the best thing that Tomb Raider did was create the possibility of a platform for more Tomb Raider movies.
Yep.
And I think that if anything, it leaves you hopeful that there's going to be more. But as an origin story, as Soph said, there's not a lot of levity. It is quite grim. It is quite hardcore. It does lose its way in some ways where, like, it doesn't quite nail the pace of, like, they want to show how she becomes the awesome heroine that is Lara Croft Tomb Raider that we know from the game. Mm. But at the same time, you know, it's like at the beginning of the film, for example, she runs into a cop car on a push bike, and then later on she's launching herself through a cave and like landing with one hand and catching it with like a hook, which is in all the trailers. And it's like,
how do you get up skills so quickly when you have no rest, no food?
Like, have a puncture wound in your side.
Yeah. It just like, oh. Like,
there's a few things in there. It's just a bit. Yeah.
What?
But it's, look,
it's a solid film.
It's solid. It's solid. Without blowing your socks off, it's solid. And look, Nick, like, they need to learn a lesson of these movies do not have to be grim.
Mm.
Like,
I was honestly hoping, like, when you saw Nick Frost, I was like, oh my God, are they going to use him more?
Oh my God.
Is he just going to be like her personal?
He was
like
a breath of fresh air in that movie.
But that's the thing though. Also in the first Lara Croft movies with Angelina Jolie, they had that with like her suppliers. They had banter to cut through.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I think that's where they're camp and fun. Like, I totally watch the first Lara Croft Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie. Absolutely agree. It's all the male gaze. And Vikander here, they're trying to really make her be like that female adventure hero, like ascend her to that sort of cinematic level. And I think there's a great appetite for it out there.
Yep.
But the problem is, I really don't think that they can keep just doing this origin story, because, and it's the same concern that I genuinely have for the Uncharted games, which I'm a massive fan of as well. It's like, they are massive ripoffs of Indiana Jones. Later on, they got better. Like, the first game is a ripoff of Indiana Jones, and then they created the great sort of Sully and Drake dynamic that went through the whole story. But that also has a bit of Tintin,
Let me ask you this. What is original these days?
not a lot, but I just think, I don't mind the method. Because I think one thing is that the Indiana Jones template of like the mystical MacGuffin and the around the world travel and discovery, that's a great template to use. And I think it's almost impossible to escape. It's much in the same way that the Bond movies have a template that they created from like Goldfinger onwards. I don't think it's wrong with using the structure, but I just think that sometimes you have to be aware that if you're using something that's close to it, you are just you're just copying it. Like, there's no, and the sucky thing is that for video games, they've been getting away with it for longer, because you can blatantly rip off a movie in a video game and change the names of people and let it slide. But when you go and recreate that video game into a movie, you're just ripping off the movie. So you need to like do something more. But look. I don't want people to think I hate this movie, but just to say that it's weird, because I watched it, I enjoyed parts of it, other parts was a bit confused, but what it got me thinking about way more was, I don't ever know if we're going to get to a point where you could play a great video game and go, man, I wish they made this into a movie. But I do think there's plenty of times where you're like, watch a really rad movie and you go, man, I wish this was a video game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to go the other way.
Just not there yet.
No, not there yet.
Well, the one thing I was really excited was to see Asian male in the film.
Asian male. Badass.
That wasn't like, you know, that wasn't a stereotypical villain.
No, wasn't a moustache-twirling villain.
And he wasn't just, you know, part of the gang. Like, actually solid character.
He was, and
I just wish they used him more, because then they just like had it like introduced him as a great character, and then it was just like, where'd you go?
Yeah,
you,
Daniel Wu, a bit underutilized, like great in concept, but just bland on execution, I think. And yeah. I think one of the challenges is, you know, and that's what I said. Like at the end of it, I felt like they've built a structure that they can sort of leap off with, and it's also, you know, she's sort of a female superhero. We've seen so many origin stories that, like, if anyone starts to say origin story, that's kind of refreshing about Black Panther, is like they just went into it. It wasn't an origin story. He already existed.
Yeah.
Much the same as Spider-Man Homecoming, even though that was an introduction to Tom Holland's Spider-Man character, it wasn't an origin story. Because if it's an origin...
Everyone knows about the origin story.
Like, yeah, it's now even more so. It's like, if you're telling an origin story of a character, just like... It better be so amazing. It's so unique, because otherwise we don't care.
No.
So, yeah. Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider. She is a lady power, though.
Yeah, she's a lady power.
She's lady power.
Very good lady powers.
But unfortunately, this week we thought we were able to review Jessica Jones and Annihilation.
No, but we're so slow. Like, I'm sorry, Netflix. Like, Soph and I were talking about it just off air before we kicked off, which is like, the episodes are long.
For Jessica Jones. They're an hour long each. They're very heavy.
Heavy and good quality. So's 8 episodes in. I'm 6 episodes in. The quality of the season, tremendous. Really personally liking, because I love detective stories, so I really like more this season. We've got a lot more of the detective procedural, her actually doing the deed. Like, I think if you're an investigator, like...
Mm.
It would be cool to see you investigate. So this season has been pretty refreshing with that. But yeah, like very good quality, great. I have just not been able to get through it.
This one's really slow paced as well. So you're in for a long haul, but it's worth it so far.
Yeah, very worth it. So we're going to touch base on that next week. We're going to touch base on that.
That and Annihilation, because due to our attempts to binge Jessica Jones, we haven't gotten around to Alex Garland's Annihilation.
Yeah, so we'll get to Annihilation, but also with Annihilation, you can't approach Annihilation with, like, you can't approach Annihilation with, like, half-tiredness. You need to be all in. And so I'm like, all or nothing. I refuse to watch an Alex Garland movie where I'm, like, half in. It's not going to happen. So, yeah, that's going to happen very shortly, too. But look, there's still some badass lady news.
I know. Ava DuVernay, whose A Wrinkle in Time is coming out in 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. I want to see that freaking movie so much.
2 weeks. Although, Blake, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this. So we saw it with Black Panther, where, you know, people were skewing the ratings before it even came out, trying to, like, bring down the scores, the critical scores. And they're doing it now again with A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, of course they are. It's just meaning, like, what I will say...
Wait, are we starting our shit list early?
No, yeah, we might have. I'm sorry, we diverted straight out of Lady Powers. Quick, hit the shit list.
You are officially on my shit list!
Okay, so this is what it is. IMDb is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is. So, movie ratings and what's become a little bit more prevalent is, like, Rotten Tomatoes is the 6th highest... rated movie site on the internet. And so IMDb is right up there too. They're like top one or two. You can make a rating of a movie, and what people have only just recently started to do is, because some of these films have been coming out and, you know, people have been, you know, hitching them to a political wagon, people are figuring out, well, oh, I can manipulate what people think about this movie by doing this. IMDb is problematic in and of itself because, Shawshank Redemption. But Shawshank Redemption is the best movie ever on IMDb. Really? The best ever? Ever? It's real good.
Wouldn't put it in the best movie ever.
The best movie of all time.
That's got to be ever. Debated. That's got to be debated.
That's IMDb user ratings.
Wow.
So you have to, like, as much as that shows, that's a really interesting demographic snapshot of showing the number of user ratings plus the rating of the movie.
Yeah.
And then it goes down and sort of it's, you know, there's a few selections in that top 10 where you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, Godfather Part 1, Godfather Part 2, it starts to show you. But then, like, I'm a huge Batman The Dark Knight fan.
Yeah.
But The Dark Knight's in, like, the top 10 of all time. And it's like, look, I love Batman. I do. Really love it. But it's not, like, top 10 greatest films of all time. Like, the greatest films of all
time. It was probably one of Heath Ledger's greatest performances of all time.
I mean, look, Brokeback Mountain. I mean, Brokeback Mountain is right up there too. So, like, amazing, 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 amazing. So, it's just really interesting. And I think that people have just started to manipulate it because they can. And so, now it's almost like, you know, people are using bots and all this BS to, like, mark it down. So, I just think it's... I think there's got to be a way, like, internet anonymity now is the problem.
Yeah.
Because people can go in there and shit on it anonymously and skew a rating, but it doesn't say Blake Howard rated this and this is definitely him and here's his Facebook profile that it's attached to and it's not just a bot, it's like a real person.
Yep.
You know, I think that sort of stuff is... Like, they've got to be some more fail safes to find out that it's legit people.
Because it's already bringing those ratings down. And for people who aren't really into film or who are just, like, casual film goers, they look at those reviews. And that will skew some of their thinking.
Some of it, yeah. I just think people just need to like anything.
And it's gone to the point where, you know, like, Roxane Gay is actually buying out cinemas just so anyone can watch that film in the US.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, Wrinkle in Time is not going to have any problem making its money back, number one. Number two, it's an extremely ambitious project just to begin with because it's a, you know, from what I hear, the book is quite complex and a lot of times, you know, people were even using the words that it was going to be unadaptable. And so it might not be your run-of-the-mill thing. It might be really ambitious. But Ava DuVernay is not going to have any problems getting people to A, see this movie, or B, to do any other project. So I just think, you know, I think it's, I'm really optimistic that there's not going to be too much longer that dipshits and dum-dums skewing the scores on, like, if you legitimately don't like something, rate it away. If you want to rate it, go nuts, whatever. Yep. But I think this, like, let's do it, it's just, it's so dumb. And what they're actually going to do is they're going to make that user rating pointless.
So, which then leaves where does the film review slash these sites live? Like, what is their significance?
So I think what will start to happen, and I don't know if Rotten Tomatoes can do it, but I think maybe Rotten Tomatoes will start to scrutinize the membership who are actually doing that. But I think what it's actually going to do is make people think that those user ratings are BS.
Yeah.
Because previously, the reason that they put the user rating was to see a critical comparison, because some movies are panned by critics because critics, like, for better or worse, whatever your opinion is with a critic, a film critic is really a film lover. Like, they love movies. Like, at the end of the day, a film critic loves movies and they love to go to movies, and even movies that follow the same templates or feel a bit generic or whatever, if they're done really exceptionally well, film critics usually, and especially if the movie's really good, you usually see from a Rotten Tomatoes score, because it's an aggregator of people saying positive or negative stuff, that it'll eventually say that the movie's extremely positive. And you just have to look at what, even in the last year, has been super positive. Black Panther, amazing scores. Like, Lady Bird, amazing scores. Shape of Water, very solid scores. And what happens is, it just is a way to start a conversation. Film lovers love film. And we all, like, I think also, sometimes people just think that critics want to bash the living shit out of stuff, but we think of film as, some critics think, and it's also about what critics are thinking, you know? It's certain critics think about film as art. Certain critics look at a project and go, what is this trying to do? Who is the audience? Who's the audience is it for? And I don't know, like, I always think that critical thought's extremely valuable. As long as...
Well, the thing is, if we don't critique anything, that's how we end up with a dictatorship. Like Trump.
Yeah, but people were still criticizing stuff. And
Putin. Yeah. They're too scared, half of them.
all of them are too scared for that. But, I think criticism in the form for film is extremely valuable because, you know, especially now,
yep,
the environment I feel needs to be curated because we have so many options. And if you don't hear from people who love movies and are experts on it telling you sometimes, or like, or at least pointing you in the directions, or you find great critics who are amazing writers, and like they give you, and you get a sense for that, you feel like, oh, this is the kind of person that I can follow, then it's really tough. I'll give you a great example. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. He probably won't. I got a buddy, Sammy, who like literally loves reading another one of our friend, Luke Buckmaster, who writes for The Guardian's reviews. Because Sammy says, if Luke hates it, I'll love it. Now, that...
I love that. I know that he knows his taste so well.
Like, Sammy's like, I know that if I... And he reads every one of Luke's reviews.
Yeah.
And I love, like, sorry to pat my friends on the back in the middle of a podcast, but Luke's one of my favorite writers because I read Luke and I go... Sometimes he has, we are spot on. Like, we love the same thing. Like, he loved the movie Goldstone. You know, he loves the movie The Grey. And, like, sometimes we're, like, completely on the same page. Love Black Panther. Mm. And then other times, he just belts a movie to pieces that I might think was okay or think was great. Mm. But I still definitely appreciate his opinion. So sometimes it's, like, great. You find critics like that. And there are people who do that. Like, you don't have to go, oh, that critic's me. So, like, they think like me, so I'm going to like movies they like. Sometimes it's the complete opposite. It's like, you know, people used to do it with Stratton. They're like, if Stratton hates this movie, I'm going to love it. And so I love that. So I think it's a great indicator. I think it might be, you know, if you see a user score that's really poor on Rotten Tomatoes, some people might go, well, that means that the trolls have been at it, so I'm definitely seeing this movie. So,
or could it be just be heavily panned?
Or it could be bad. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. That's, I don't have an answer, Soph. I really don't.
I just looked at you because you're the film critic. So, like the professional film critic.
I know.
I'm just a fan of pop culture.
Look, we're both fans of pop culture. And, you know, I'm not really a professional film critic. Let's not get too crazy.
ABC News, Oscars correspondent. Hello.
Yeah, I guess I'm a film critic, but I'm a movie fan. I love movies. I never go into a movie wanting to hate it, ever. I want to go and enjoy it. I literally want to sit down and I want it to be an enjoyable experience. I want to find something valuable. And just to flip back to our lovely lady Lara, like, mm-hmm. There was a lot to enjoy in something like a Tomb Raider.
So much.
But sometimes an opinion's more complex than a rotten or a fresh.
Yeah.
Like, you can say, was Tomb Raider a fresh or a rotten? I'd probably go, unfortunately, my middle ground is like, would I ever watch this movie again? And I don't actually think I would. So it might skew maybe toward a rotten for me, but there's still lots of good stuff in there. But I don't know if I'd watch it again when we've got, like, I've got six more episodes of Jess Jones. Annihilation.
This is the thing, though. In a time where there's so much content, how do you choose? Choice is so important now.
And I think great, anything that's good, that's worth watching more than once in this world is like, they should be savored and you want to read about it. You want them to be good. So, yeah, look. Let's move on. Let's get out of the shit list. Let's get to Ava
because very exciting news because she'll undoubtedly just kill the box office like Black Panther did with A Wrinkle in Time.
Yes. Not quite. I don't think it's going to be big as Black Panther, but it's going to make its money.
It's going to make Disney a lot of money. Disney are very happy that they chose a lot of diverse diverse directors this year.
Yeah.
To put out great movies.
Yeah, and so, look, DC's like, we'll have some of that, thank you very much. And they've got Ava coming to Warner Brothers.
Wow.
To direct... Of course. This was going to happen. It happens all the time. They poached Joss Whedon too. to do Jack Kirby's iconic DC Comics, The New Gods, which is, if you haven't heard about it, it's like sort of Dark Side, Apocalypse...
So you kind of had a glimpse, a little of it in the Wonder Woman films and Justice League.
Yes.
We saw, you know, who is this Darkseid? No, they used, what was his name? Steppenwolf. As a literally stepping stone to get to Darkseid. But like, there's hints of it so far.
Yeah, there's some hints, but what I love about Ava doing it is...
Sorry, but would this be in the same universe as those...
That's the next thing I would say.
Because weren't there rumors that they were saying they were going to stop with this little DC film universe?
Yeah, look, I don't know if they're going to keep it. I really don't. I at the moment, they're just saying that she's signing on. Originally, it was like It was in what's called the Fourth World Saga, and Darkseid was all involved in it, and it was like these new gods that come onto the Earth to get this special particle that can control all life because it was on Earth. And so getting her along for it, I mean, she's a fantastic director. I can't wait to see Wrinkle in Time. And if you haven't seen Selma, her incredible Martin Luther King story, you really need to, and The 13th, both of them on Netflix. But yeah, I'm just keen for her to like, actually bring some colour in the nicest possible way to the DC Universe. Kirby's characters are big and colourful and vibrant, and I would love to see her bring some of that colour, and I would love to see her bring some of that diversity, and I would love to see how much of a leash they give her to, like, change characters and play around with it a little bit.
Because, yeah, if you're thinking colour, like, what? But DC's all dark. But the original New Gods, if you think of what Thor Ragnarok was, that set was heavily inspired by old Jack Kirby.
Yeah, Jack Kirby, yeah.
Old Jack Kirby stuff. So that's the kind of colour we're expecting for New Gods.
Well, that's what we want. That is exactly what we want. there's no new Uno news this week.
Uno. If you don't know what Uno means, it means the solo's movie.
Solo
movie.
Uno. We prefer it to be Uno. But there is, speaking of Disney and people being poached, Colin Trevorrow, some Star Wars news, just really quick. Colin Trevorrow, who was going to be directing episode 9.
Yes. No longer?
No, he's not. He's out. J.J. Abrams is in for episode 9.
That's right. He was.
They've swapped it. But there's comicbookmovie.com have actually said that Trevorrow had a plan for Luke and Leia's relationship in episode 9, and he and Mark Hamill had seen eye to eye on that. But one of the main reasons that Trevorrow left episode 9 was because Rian Johnson and Kathleen Kennedy had agreed on what Luke's fate would be in The Last Jedi,
and because his story won't play out.
No, he was like, okay, well, I'm out. So that's what they're saying is now part of the rumor mill around, you know,
why he left.
But you know what? I deeply respect that, though, because I'm like, if you hire a filmmaker who's a storyteller and they find a way to tell that story and like take it into whole drastically new directions, you can't just have a crutch of like, oh, I want him to. No, like if you want the story.
He's built the story to be this specifically.
Yes. And if he's built, and also, you know, credit to Trevorrow, if he's got a very clear concept in his head of what he wanted it to be, and Rian Johnson's got a conflict, they've got a conflict of interest right from the beginning. Mm. So you can't, there's not much you can do there.
And when Ryan's got the film before you and dictates the fate of some of your characters that you'd like to survive the next film, well.
Sorry.
The sorriest.
We have a new segment coming up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a name. What was a good name for the new segment?
Do it.
It's Le Bouff with Do It.
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just do it!
The most aggressive way of trying to inspire people to follow their dreams.
Yeah, look, it's Shia LaBeouf. I mean, I really like Shia LaBeouf. I think as an actor, he's phenomenal. I think he's a dude who, like, had an existential crisis play out and unfortunately had an existential crisis and, like, a, you know, his own political philosophy and his own values all play out writ large through tabloids, which is really unfortunate.
Worst way. That's what screwed up most other child actors.
Yeah. And so this is a young guy who started coming up, you know, very lucky to work on massive movies like Transformers, very lucky to work with Steven Spielberg. And at the time, when he had this sort of existential crisis about what he wanted his career to be, he shat on them publicly, not literally. Just in the press, saying, you know, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull was dumb, which it is.
It was.
Michael Bay's a douchebag and the Transformers movies are terrible, which they are. But
From two onwards.
Yeah, yeah. So
first one still has a special place in my
heart. So what sucks though, right, is, yeah, you know, he's still having this stuff that's affecting his career. He was talking about, he's like trying to make a Spike Lee movie. Spike Lee wants him to be in it.
Yeah.
And his literal quote from this great Esquire interview is, I was talking to him about it. He goes to the money and pushes to try and get me in the movie. The money says no, and that's the end of me hanging out with Spike Lee for this movie. Like, you know, so it's still affecting his career, which sucks. And obviously he hasn't, you know, he's been drunken in some places and done some weird stuff. So, yeah, he's struggling a bit, but it's no surprise, right? He was a kid actor. This is really, yeah, weird. But so he was talking about...
But I feel his heart's in the right place.
I think it is now too. Like, he even,
like,
says...
Like, a lot of the things that, you know, even though he's getting to some minor, like, you know...
Altercations
and whatnot. All of them are, like, him protesting bad political decisions.
Yeah. And he actually said this. He goes, look, Michael and Steven did a lot for me. I'm not going to poo-poo those dudes anymore. My hang-up with those Transformer films was that they felt irrelevant. They felt dated as fuck. You come up with these stories about Easy Rider and Raging Bull and De Niro and Scorsese and Hopper, and you find value in what they do. Meanwhile, you're chasing energon crystals. It's very hard to keep doing what you're doing when you feel like it's the antithesis of your purpose on this planet. And I thought... That's what I wanted to talk about on Gaggle. Like, wow. Like, this dude clearly finds that there's, like, an artistic pursuit. He's trying to add value as a performer, like, trying to create art. And he just kind of got trapped as a child actor, like, growing into it. And it was just unfortunate that some of those opinions that probably totally would have been super interesting to hear from him now as a later actor, if he just abandoned those movies silently.
Yeah.
Would have, you know, and I reckon people would have been going, oh, that's amazing and admirable and artistic. He just didn't do it as gracefully. But I think that he's a super interesting dude. And I think he's a terrific actor. Anyone who says he's not a terrific actor, you're out of your mind. He's great.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been in some solid movies.
Yeah.
I mean, who can forget how great he was in Holes?
He was good in Holes.
He was great in Holes.
Good in Constantine. Mm-hmm. He was really good in American Honey, which is a terrific indie from last year. It was amazing. If you haven't seen David Ayer's tank film Fury, he's terrific in that. Like, the best performer in the whole movie. Yeah, some really good stuff there.
We'll just see. As long as it doesn't end in a mental breakdown situation.
Please, no more mental breakdowns, Shia. No more drinking. No more of that stuff. That's not good.
Hopefully. We'll see how it goes. But, like, I didn't think we'd have anything this week for Talking Tiger.
Oh, man. Let's do it. Weekly with Titi. Here we come.
I'm sorry I'm not J.J. Abrams. They say, oh, Tiger, we wish we called you J.J. Abrams.
Speaking of J.J. Abrams before... Oh, Taika Waititi. Bless.
He's helming a new film, very excitingly, because it's been too long
since
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, since so long.
But an original, like, not based on other properties.
He's doing an original film.
Mm.
And the film is called, I don't know if it's Ho-Ho or Jojo.
I'm going with Jojo.
It's Jojo Rabbit. And
it might be Ho-Ho.
Could be Ho-Ho Rabbit.
It's J-O-J-O.
J-O-J-O.
Yeah.
J-O-J-O. So we're saying ho ho. And we're saying and we're saying uno. It's
a guide for our listeners, just like this is what we mean.
Uno. So look, the film follows a 10-year-old boy influenced by Nazi propaganda who dreams of serving alongside Adolf Hitler during World War II. Because of his Hitler obsession and feelings of sadness due to his absent father, the boy invents an imaginary friend version of Hitler played by Taika Waititi.
Yours truly.
Oh, shit. It's my version of a lonely boy's best version of his hero, which is really his dad. So it sounds like Boy meets Drop Dead Fred, but with Taika Waititi as a Kiwi version of Hitler.
Yeah. I mean, he did that with in Boy with Michael Jackson. So.
Yeah. And he's like, this is not the Adolf Hitler we know and hate. This guy's goofy, charming, and glides through life with a childlike naivete. I literally cannot wait to see this movie. It sounds so ridiculous.
And people are like, oh my God, but Hitler? It's like, yes, this kid is in the Hitler Youth. Set in World War II? So...
I can't wait to see this
movie.
I can't
wait to see him in that mustache.
Oh, my God. It's so dumb. Like, this sounds so great. It was on the blacklist, which, if you don't know what the blacklist is, in the Hollywood sense, the blacklist is not to be confused with the shit list, but the Blacklist is actually the best unproduced screenplays kicking around. So, you know, Ho Ho Rabbit or Jojo, whichever one. Jojo.
Jojo Rabbit, yeah. Yeah.
So good, yeah. Yeah, so no, in Germany, J is definitely J, so.
But, you know, you have this Maori Jewish man playing Adolf Hitler.
Oh, my God. It's so weird. It's great.
I love it.
Oh my God, every movie this guy does, he literally can't.
It's just gold.
Yeah.
It's just gold.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so much for, you know, him immediately getting, you know, swarmed to do something else that...
I just love that he's sticking to his roots and just going, yeah. Yeah, you're going to throw me heaps of money, but just wait, I need to make this original film.
I need to make this weird original film set in Nazi Germany about a kid with an imaginary friend who just happens to be carefree Hitler. and look, The Great Dictator, Charlie Chaplin's incredible, incredible film. Mm. You know, a mock-up of Hitler at the time of Hitler, which is amazing. Hitler can be funny, but... nothing that he did, but Charlie Chaplin playing Hitler can be funny. So I have no doubt that Taika Waititi playing Hitler can be funny.
Oh, it's going to be hilarious.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be great.
Oh, my God.
It's Hitler so with weird. A Kiwi accent.
Could you have ever imagined it?
Kiwi Hitler.
If you put $10,000 on what he was going to do next, this would not have been it.
Because it was like, all we're hearing, like, you know, we heard a lot about What We Do in the Shadows and all its subsequent spin-offs. We heard about The Upper Breakers, which I'm really still excited about.
I'm very excited. Very excited.
And then just like, hey, guys, Kiwi Hitler, what up?
Oh, man.
Oh, if he sounds anything like Korg.
It's just going to be Korg. That's exactly who he's going to be. There's no doubt. No, he kind of does... In What We're Doing Shadows, he's like dandy character who's kind of got a bit of an accent.
Oh, just a little bit. But still Transylvanian, got the but not really.
Yeah. But that's exactly what we're going to get.
Oh, this is the thing. You can't see us, but Blake and I are smiling like absolute
loons. Oh my God, it's so
dumb.
It's
like,
so good.
Like grinning ear to ear because just the idea of this project
so
brings
silly.
So much
it's
joy.
It's so goofy. It is goofy as. But, yeah, I know. I love it. I love it. I'm all in. I'm so all in. Oh, God, so dumb. But, yes, I'm all in for this movie. Really can't wait.
Shall we end on that happy note?
Yeah.
Because you did rant a bit before. It was kind of incorporated into your shit list.
No. We have to. There's one more thing we have to talk about.
Okay. We have a rant?
No. Okay. Oh, it might lead into a rant.
Oh, let's see. Let's see where we go.
You didn't play
a
little trailer that dropped this week.
Oh, my God. I did not. So much happening.
There was so much happening. You got too excited with a weekly Waititi that you missed out on this.
Some questions for you, Professor.
This is a surprise.
There's a rumor that Newt Scamander is headed to Paris. I know he's working under your orders. What do you have to say for yourself, Dumbledore?
If you'd ever had the pleasure to teach him, you'd know Newt is not a great follower of orders.
The time's coming, Newt. When you're gonna have to pick a side.
Are you going somewhere?
No, we're going somewhere.
Jeez.
I can't move against Grindelwald. It has to be you.
Ah.
like, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and I can't believe Taika made me forget about this. Like, seriously, but oh my God, what a trailer drop, the biggest trailer this week.
I know. You were so caught up in imagining him dancing around, dancing as Hitler, that you got so excited that you forgot about how thick Jude Law looks.
Oh my God. Dreamy Dumbledore. Hello.
Oh my gosh. The thirst was strong on the internet when this trailer dropped.
And like, think of like Jude Law back in his Alfie days. That level of thirst was just like,
oh my gosh. People saw him in a beard, saw him in a delicious three-piece suit without his jacket, saw him sitting on a table. They went, ape shit.
Oh yeah. He's playing this Dumbledore's Alfie. It's just like, yes, please.
Look, Jude Law is a good actor. People, he's had that unfortunate thing that really good-looking actors had. He just hasn't had his, like, reconnaissance where he, like, got typecast into a bunch of garbage, but he's actually a really good actor, and he's got some good chops, and he looks fun as Dumbledore. I am much more interested in this, but at the same time, I was just like, I didn't even want to see Hogwarts. It really kind of pissed me off.
I actually really enjoyed the Hogwarts bits.
No, look, the Hogwarts bits are good as in when you see them interviewing Dumbledore. But I was like, it took them, like, there's 5 movies that is meant to be. I'm like, could you give 2 movies without Hogwarts? We're straight back to freaking Hogwarts. I'm like, that was just one thing. I was like,
it's the thing though, when you're including Dumbledore, the guy has never left school.
He just never leaves.
He just never freaking leaves.
You're
school.
A freaking hermit. No, but look, yeah, I'm curious, but I also, you know, it's really healthy to be very skeptical of this movie.
Absolutely.
Because we are gushing Harry Potter fans.
We are. And
the gush is real. Like, the thirst this week is real.
And the thing was, when they announced this film and that they were keeping Johnny Depp on, we were like, but if the film is anything like the trailer where we only see about 2 seconds of Johnny Depp and no more than that, I am pretty happy with that.
The movie?
Sorry, guys.
Just have to remind something. She's going to have a little bit of meaning on the show. The movie's called The Crimes of Grindelwald. I think we're going to see Grindelwald. Just a guess. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, we see him, but if it's only like 2 seconds like we saw in the trailer.
I think we're going to see more. Just a little bit.
Maybe they keep to the same ratio of, you know, 90% Dumbledore.
I feel like you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
But, yeah, like, I did not enjoy seeing Johnny Depp in that. But everything else, I was like,
look, I'm fine with Johnny Depp. I'm like, look, Johnny Depp is a human being, questionable as hell. I don't actually know what happened. I let the authorities. My personal opinion on it is, if they've discussed it and there's some shady stuff. My personal opinion on it is that he's not the whole thing in the movie. But unfortunately, when you're doing a movie called The Crimes of Grindelwald, he's going to be involved. That's just the reality. You have to accept it. But I did watch Murder on the Orient Express the other day, Ken Branagh's movie, which there actually is now turning into a franchise of the Detective Poirot movies, the next one's Death on the Nile, and Johnny Depp is in it, and he's in it for the beginning. He actually, spoilers, hashtag spoilers, he gets killed gruesomely.
Was it satisfying?
Yeah. I mean, like, does that sound weird? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's, look, I think, it is what it is. Like, he's going to be in these movies and people are just going to have to move along with it. Like, you have to accept it. Otherwise, you can't ever get past it.
I know, but I feel like my issue mainly is because if he's in, like, any other contemporary adult film, okay, that's choice. But this is a children's film.
Yeah, it's weird.
Because it's a children's film. Family film.
Yeah.
That's my main issue with it.
No, I think, look, totally agree. But I just think, unfortunately, we're all going to have to just put our blinkers on. If you're going to be a Harry Potter fan that's going to unashamedly love this, or at least be ready to unashamedly love it, like, to give yourself a chance, you have to look at Johnny Depp as an actor and as a performer and try and distance yourself from that. Because in art, like,
I feel like you can still enjoy and critique it at the same time.
Yeah. I think so. But I think also what cinema fans and TV fans, and it happens especially because you're literally watching a person perform and you're projecting and trying to empathize with those characters and stuff like that. It's so hard to distance ourselves from a creator and their creations in cinema. And it's and particularly in the modern age, it's becoming even more heinous, where like you can watch a film like Chinatown, which is one of the greatest film noirs ever made, and its filmmaker Roman Polanski just happens to have drugged and had sex with a 13-year-old girl. Now, do you completely dismiss the film, even though it's a masterpiece, even though Faye Dunaway is amazing in it, even though Jack Nicholson is outstanding, even though the score is perfect, even though the script is sharp, because you don't like him? Like, I think it's hard, because there might be, like, look at how much money they're pumping into this. Look at all Absolutely. These other great people. It's just like, it's really, I just think it's hard. It's super hard.
It's hard, but I know a lot of people who are like, no, they are against my values. I will stop consuming this media because so-and-so made it.
Yeah.
I know people who are like, I'm actively only going to go to these kind of shows or these kind of films or those kind of TV films because the rest, those people, I do not want to know or be associated with.
And I think that's a totally fair argument. But I also think I don't...
But it's losing the audience.
Sorry, no. Yeah. What I was going to say, that's an extreme... Like, that's a pretty extreme position to take.
Mm.
Like, if you hate one actor in a film...
It wouldn't be...
It's really tough with an actor. I mean, with an actor.
Mm-hmm. In an ensemble film.
In a massive ensemble... Like, if you're doing Locke with Tom Hardy and you hate Tom Hardy, which is basically a movie of a guy driving a car, and it's only him in the movie, I totally get you going, I'm not watching this movie because I hate him. Even like Collateral with Tom Cruise, if you fundamentally have an issue with Tom Cruise, I get you not liking that movie. But then when you watch a movie like Magnolia, which also stars Tom Cruise, but it has a massive, broad and beautiful ensemble and is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who I think is a master, then I get curious with people going, I don't like that actor or that performer. And I'm like, well, do you then dismiss that entire potentially great film because there's three scenes with this one person that you don't like?
Mm.
And so, yeah, hopefully, according to Soph, there'll be just as much Johnny Depp as there is in the trailer. Fingers crossed. You won't have to have this conflict, but I think it's a good thing to talk about. I do, and if you're one of those people listening to this podcast and you are like, I will never watch a Johnny Depp movie again, I will never consume any film that he's in, and I'm not going to do it, I respect you for your extreme position. But I don't hate on anyone who's like, I can find distance between a person who's performing a scripted character written by J.K. Rowling, who's an author and a screenwriter that I love, in a movie about wizards. I think you can have a mutually exclusive position and say, this is a piece of art and that's a person.
That's fair.
It's tough, but. I don't disagree that it's tough, and I think there are levels in which it's tough, but it's like, also, you got like the monster Harvey Weinstein. He produced and was a producer on amazing movies. And so some people are like, I'm never watching anything he produced. It's like, what? You're not going to watch Kevin Smith, Robert Rodriguez?
But I feel like, he was a producer though. You don't get to see him on screen.
Yeah, true. He at least is allowed to hide.
He hides, and you know, he's just throwing money at the creators.
Agreed.
To make these films. So slightly different. But I don't know. It is very hard, but, you know, enjoy your pop culture where you can and critique it and say, you know, try and edit people out when they're being horrible. Reshoot a whole film in 6 weeks if you can.
I don't think that everyone can all the money in the world do that. It's an aptly titled movie as well. Right. All the money in the world to reshoot it in 6 weeks. Totally. But yeah, look, it's tough.
Yes. Is that your rant? Is that our rant?
I was extremely measured in that rant, saying I deeply respect those who want to be extreme, but I also don't begrudge anyone for liking a movie that has a person that has a questionable past.
This is the thing that's most of Hollywood these days, so which then leads...
No, not just these days. In the classic Hollywood, it was even worse.
Which, in my opinion, means invest in more... non-trash people.
Yeah,
like, today.
Yeah, and look, there
and stop employing the trash people.
Yeah, and that will happen too. That will happen too. But also, you know, it's
more lady filmmakers, more people of color filmmakers.
Yeah, that's happening. That's all happening. I think a few people forget, like, J.K. Rowling is the screenwriter and producer in these movies. She's making some bank. She's a lady.
Mm.
She has a lot of influence about everything, every element of the movie, so should be good.
Dumbledore's not gay in this one.
We don't know that yet either. We don't know that yet. I just don't care. Like, again, if you watch Fantastic Beasts,
yeah.
I'm like, who cares? I watch this trailer, I'm like, okay, I'm curious.
You're curious?
I'm curious.
Curious.
Mainly because of Jude Law's dress sense.
Mm.
Mm.
Mm. God damn.
Damn. All right, I've got to go get Sophie a towel.
I'm not thirsting that hard.
No, there's no... There's no
I am no, like, you know, Michael B. Jordan.
The girl who broke a retainer, no.
I am not that level. No. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Thank you. I was thirsting way harder for him. Get it right, like...
Michael B. Jordan.
So, yeah. On that note, we'll leave it on a very thirsty note. This has been Gaggle of Geeks, the 2SER
And don't podcast. Forget, guys, you can go on to iTunes. You can search Gaggle of Geeks. All of our episodes are up there. Please subscribe, rate, review if you dig it. Reach out to us on the Twitters. I'm at Blake is Batman on Twitter. Soph is...
At Soph_LY.
And at 2SER all the time.
All the time.
And if you want to listen to us live, we are usually on at 11:15-ish as part of Soph's awesome show, The Culture Show on 2SER. So hot right now.
The hottest.
But Soph is not on So Hot Right Now this week.
No, so I'm not there. You might hear our dulcet tones.
Dulcet tones. You could hear us.
But we're not there physically.
We're not there. We are not. It's like you're hearing us now, but we're not in the same place.
What?
What?
What is this?
What is this magic? Yes. Yes. Magic. We won't be there. What is this magic? That's Jude Law's behind. Do you reckon Jude Law was pissed off that J-Law got the nickname J-Law? Something I thought about. I'm an idiot.
I am pondering this really hard. You can't see me, but I'm actually thinking really hard. I don't know. Jude's short enough to not need a shortener.
But it's still pretty gangster. If he had it, it'd be gangster. With her, it might be in a brief. Hashtag a brief.
Gigs. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jude's just like a sexy name, right? It's got a bit of...
Just, hey, Jude.
Hey, here's your new boyfriend. This is Jude.
We'll stop creeping out the people who listen. So to
listen. Why? That's why you listen, isn't it?
What?
Give the people what they want. All right. Well, we're going to go off and thirst on Jude Law. Stay geeky. We'll chat to you guys next week. There's lots of good stuff coming out. We're going to be talking in the next episode. We're probably going to be talking a couple of geeky things. Ready Player One, the new Señor Spielberg film is coming out in Oz, and it's just premiered at South by Southwest. And, oh, the freaking fever pitch reviews of that one. So we'll try and maintain some sanity.
There's also an uprising.
Uprising.
Of Pacific Rim.
And John Boyega, incidentally, the guy who cut his hair for this movie, also cuts my hair. Pretty awesome.
You share the same hairdresser?
I know. I know. I'm not even 6 degrees. I'm 1 degree.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I feel freaking awesome. Fade to Newtown. Check it out. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.